WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Tom Foti in Washington. Starting the cleanup along the Big Bend and Gulf Coast of Florida, where Hurricane Idalia left plenty of damage to clean up, but so far no confirmed casualties.
You know, we can rebuild all of this. No one's hurt, not right here. And it's just really sad, you know, but it is what it is, and we make the best of it, and we will.
CBS's Jason Allen is in the town of Steinhatchee.
Idalia unleashed its destructive force on a wide stretch of Florida's Gulf Coast. The storm made its fearsome landfall Wednesday morning as a Category 3 hurricane. Carving a long trail of destruction, Idalia landed southeast of Tallahassee in the less populated Big Bend region of the Florida Panhandle.
It went through one of our least populated corridors you could ask for it to go through.
But officials say the remote location is likely to slow the work of search teams.
Idalia also hit parts of Georgia and the Carolinas, at one point knocking out power to hundreds of thousands of customers. Overseas, at least 64 people have died in a fire in a building in South Africa's biggest city.
We understand from Johannesburg Emergency Services that that building is a residential block and it's got a lot of people living in it. The emergency services are saying that the search and recovery of bodies is still continuing. They have managed to put out the fire.
The BBC's Nomsa Maseko. There's a chaotic political situation in the West African nation of Gabon.
Ainsi que les résultats tronqués.
The mutinous soldiers claim to have arrested the president, whose family has held power for more than 50 years. They took over just minutes after it was announced he had won another term.
Correspondent Cammie McCormick. Back here, what was ailing the Republican leader of the U.S. Senate?
Taking questions from reporters in Kentucky, Mitch McConnell suddenly stops speaking.
Running for re-election in 2026.
Not sure.
Expressionless for several seconds, McConnell continued to stare straight ahead.
All right, I'm sorry, you all, we're going to need a minute.
McConnell ultimately gathered himself and finished the press conference.
Correspondent Scott McFarlane. Well, many of us are about to get moving. The AAA's Robert Sinclair Jr. has been watching the skies as well as the roads.
Upwards of 14 million are flying for the holiday this weekend, so it's important that travelers have the airline's app on their phone. They can get FlightAware app, and that can tell them what's going on. And if they have the airline's app, they'll be able to be notified in real time about what's going on with their flight.
Well, it sold big time during the pandemic, but now Danish toy maker Lego reports a big drop in profits, one of the biggest in almost two decades, some of it due to inflation. U.S. market futures pointing up. This is CBS News.
You need to hire fast and hire right? You need Indeed. Their all-in-one hiring platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates efficiently. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
The kids are heading back to class. But when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west-northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
If I could be you.
And you could be me.
For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way.
To get inside.
Each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy.
Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
UPS Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
93.5 The Tap.
Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Todd Albaugh, along with Mr. Aaron Zommers, our producer and engineer. It is Wednesday, August 30th, 2023, hump day on the calendar. That means one thing. It is crossover Wednesday at Civic Media, and a very punctual, unlike myself on his show this morning, a very punctual Pat Kreitlow of Up North News every morning, 6 until 8. I've been pretty consistent over the last, how long have we been doing this? 6 months or so? Six months?
It feels like 6-7 years.
And I had not missed one yet. And this morning it was a chaotic night.
It happens.
And I'm sorry. I apologize.
No, it's like I told you, it's merely reaffirmation of your youth. I set an alarm for 4:15 every morning, and I maybe once a week need that alarm because I end up just at my age waking up on my own at 4 a.m. anyway. And so I'm like, okay, I'm here. May as well get going. That has not happened to you yet. Did Aaron lose the soundbite? Did you tell him to lose it? Or is the onus on me now? When you say that every week to go, hump day. I mean, where did that?
Hump day.
I mean,
there it is.
There. See, I'll bring it if you want. I think sure. I get a licensing fee for it, but sure.
The Geico Cam, when I was a store manager at L.L. Bean, we had these startup meetings. And when I managed on a Wednesday, I always started our startup meetings with that. And the younger kids just rolled their eyes, but I thought it was funny.
Guess what? We all do. It's okay. We all do.
Yeah. How you been, Mr. Kreitlow?
I'm good. I've been really good, especially the news lately here that Jonathan Owens has made the cut and is going to be on the Packers roster, which is fine. Maybe an Owens Packer jersey is fine. But remember who he's married to, his newlywed bride. Who wouldn't like a Simone Biles Packer jersey?
I think it's fantastic.
I think if you take the patriotic design of her Olympic leotard and you incorporate that into a Packers jersey, that's gold, kids. Gold.
And can you imagine the halftime show is at Lambeau Field this year? A balance beam right on the G? she's gonna pop out the tunnel and do three cartwheels and a double sal cow or whatever. I guess that's hot.
I think that's ice skating. That's okay. Yeah.
She'll stick the landing. It'll be spectacular. Yep. No, I'm happy for him.
Hey, look, if he can do the same thing, maybe she has taught him a trick or two that we're going to see him use, you know, in the secondary. This could be a good year.
Yeah, I think it's exciting. Football is in the air, Pat Kreitlow, and we've got it all covered on Civic Media. Not only the Packers, we carry several of our stations have the Packers. This Saturday, the Wisconsin Badgers, they'll be on Amory, WRCE, and Richland Center. Wisconsin Rapids, and we're seeing Kenosha, so it's exciting.
I especially that the Big Ten now is stretching coast to coast. I mean, I think we're going to have we're adding Tokyo University because this conference expansion is getting ridiculous. Yes. The Pac-12 is now down to the Pac-2. I think Stanford and Cal just play each other 8 times a season.
Pretty much.
I don't know what this all is in college sports. I'm not a big fan of it, so I'm just going to focus on the Badgers themselves, get to a Rose Bowl or some other some fun game and enjoy it, including on the app, I guess. We'll be able to stream it there. So
the Badgers are on the app as well. So if you don't live over those communities I mentioned, you know, all you have to do is download the Civic Media app, where you can find Mr. Kreitlow every morning from 6 until 8, and also Wisconsin Badgers. I want to get to your thoughts on, we have in our in the house here, coming on the program after the break, we have Jack Kelly and Matt DeFore from Wisconsin Watch on this big story today, where through open records requests, they got some of these emails from the Wisconsin Supreme Court. It is a daytime drama over there, Mr. Kreitlow. What's your take on all this?
It is, but I again, one of the things I don't like to see is press coverage that somehow tries to, again, you know, both sides this thing, when what you have, and as Ed Falone explained on our show a couple weeks back, is the progressive new majority simply going back to some of the transparency and other operations that existed before the conservatives made things less transparent. And so I really think that reform angle needs to be in it better. But the bigger problem here, Todd, is math. Because Annette Ziegler, the Chief Justice, is a very unhappy person right now. Very unhappy. But she's in the minority. She and, you know, these two other conservative justices compared to the progressive justices. Mm-hmm. They have the same problem that Republicans in the legislature have, who are trying to get rid of Megan Wolf as head of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. Mm-hmm. In both cases, they can't count to four. You need four votes on the Elections Commission to put Megan Wolf up there in renomination. That hasn't happened. You need four justices to make decisions. That hasn't happened. So before the Republicans go forward with a tax plan that's going to, again, blow up the not only the second highest bracket, not the top bracket. There's the big compromise. Let's learn to count to four first, and then we can work on bigger numbers from there.
Yeah, I mean, in regards to the Supreme Court stuff, I don't have any real problem with anything that the liberal court is doing right now. As you point out, most of these things were done with the conservatives in power. I think if I had only, you know, from an outsider standpoint as a communication guy, I don't think that the liberals in the Supreme Court handled the PR of it right. I don't think that it had to be quite so quick. I think it could have been settled in and done a little bit easier. That's what my
it could have. It could have. But there again is that double standard that, you know, that when conservatives do it, it's, oh, they're being tough. And when liberals do it, it's, oh, they're bending the rules that they know better to follow. And the other side, we just expect them to break it. So I guess I just don't I don't have as big a problem with it, simply because we see what this court has done over the years. 2018 taking away power from Evers and Call, and many other examples.
Pat Kreitlow every morning 6 until 8. Thank you, sir. Appreciate you. See you later.
You're welcome. See ya.
Stay tuned. Wisconsin Watch reporters up next to the Tottleball Show and Civic Media's Radio Network.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Jerry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Don't let biased algorithms or degree screens or exclusive professional networks or stereotypes. Don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
Mostly sunny today. We'll get to around 78 for a high this afternoon. The wind out of the south at 5 to 15. Tonight, clear 57. Tomorrow, Mostly sunny, breezy, and a bit warmer with a high of 85 than on Saturday through the weekend. It's going to be sunny and hot with highs in the low to mid-90s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Temperature now 49.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is now 15 past the hour of 1 o'clock. It is Wednesday, August 30th. Appreciate you listening across the state of Wisconsin and worldwide on the Civic Media app. Going to go to the phone lines, Mr. Summers, quickly, because Jack and Merrimack, we'll see what Jack's got on his mind, if it's pertinent, if it pertains to our guests here. Jack, what's on your mind today? We'll put you on the air quick. What's your question? What's up?
Well, I just wanted to say that Ziegler... She is a Republican shell. That's really what happened. This is a person that voted to overturn the legitimate election in 2020, and only by literally one vote did we keep that from happening. She's very typical of the Republicans. Now that she's starting to see the handwriting on the wall, can't be in control anymore. She is mad as heck about it.
It stirred up a hornet's nest, that's for sure, Jack.
Yeah, she's very frustrated. She can't control, really, when, where, and even what cases the state Supreme Court takes up. And you can be sure that if she were in control, we'd never see the gerrymandering case. We'd never see the light of day.
Jack, always appreciate your phone call. Thanks so much. I appreciate it. Jack and Merrimack, thanks for listening. As Mike Lucas would say, Jack's call is timely. Timely indeed. That is because our first guest here on the show from Wisconsin Watch, a great independent news organization, we have Matt DeFore and Jack Kelly, outstanding reporters here with really the story of the day on what's happening in the Wisconsin State Supreme Court and emails that they have unearthed. They've got their hands on through open records requests. And gentlemen, to Jack's point, a little chaotic over there.
It was. It was there was a lot to unpack in this right. In this trove of emails we got from them. But, you know, we tried to break it down. And just kind of to Jack's point, I think the redistricting case is really relevant as you read this story and these emails. Because what I saw, at least, when I was looking at through these emails, is there's this push and pull happening on our Wisconsin Supreme Court right now. And let me explain. So you see evidence that the liberal majority is coming in here, and they are moving very quickly to not just seat Justice Protasiewicz. You know, we found evidence that she had taken her oath of office a week in advance, which is not unusual, but it's still – they were getting ready to just move on day one, which they did. They fired the Randy Koshnick, and then they were moving quickly on taking votes. According to our reporting, we found that they were trying to take votes right away on holding this meeting where they were going to just fundamentally change the rules of the court so that the Chief Justice, Annette Ziegler, would basically be stripped of her power. So they're moving quickly. The conservatives, though, at every turn here are trying to slow things down, and they're really trying to put the brakes on any possibility here that the liberals might come in and move the court business quickly. And so you see, just again, I think as you read these emails, you should keep an eye on that idea, that sort of tug and pull.
Jack, set the stage up for us. What led you guys to focus in on this story? Was it the fact that you were asking questions and you felt they weren't being forthcoming? You did an open records request. And what led you to kind of unearth this whole story, first and foremost?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. I think that Randy Koshnick's firing really got everybody's attention. And we started the story wanting to know, why was Randy Koshnick fired? Submitted records requests related to that question, and later followed up with another request asking about some of the rule and operating procedure changes that they made. And I think that Matt and I have talked about this quite a bit, that Wisconsinites are used to stalemate right now. We've been seeing it for about 5 years with the governor being a Democrat and the legislature being controlled by Republicans. And in a way, a piece of the power in Wisconsin has shifted back to the Supreme Court now. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, it's always been there. When the conservatives were in the majority, they did several things that upheld decisions from the legislature. But this is kind of a newfound source of power for Democrats and Democratic-aligned groups. And so we'll be watching the court closely. I think it's going to be an institution of great consequence as we go forward here in the next months and years.
So, guys, set this up for people because, we're at this table. We're all kind of political nuts and follow this stuff a lot because it's interesting. You guys report on it. I was involved for a long time, and now we got the show. But for people who might not be, is in tune to this, tell folks what Randy Koshnick's job was and what kind of why this was kind of a big deal on the court itself.
One thing I will say, so we did start this trying to find out more about why Randy Koshnick was fired. I don't think we got all the answers to that question. I'll just preface with that.
Sure.
But Randy Koshnick is the administrator of the state court system. He was put in place, I believe, in 2017. And this was at a time after not only had the conservatives been in control for several years, they do note after Koshnick was fired that when they took control back in 2008, they did not fire the current administrator at that point. That person served out their term sort of as a civil servant, it seemed. Koshnick comes in. He is a conservative. He ran for the Supreme Court against Shirley Abramson at one point, so he's kind of got the liberals' goat for that reason. And he's in charge of just making sure that the court operates. The very administrative could almost be a civil servant position.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the fact that they fired him quickly, it deserves some kind of explanation from the ones who did it, because we haven't really seen that. They've not really come out and said, here are the three or four or whatever, anything that he did wrong. Mm-hmm. It leaves us kind of guessing, what was the problem with him? And it's the speculation there's been talk about. I think I've seen reporting in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel relating to, how he handled this the court reporter situation where they were trying some new ways of doing that. But it all seems to point back to just politics.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like it is they want somebody in there who they can trust, and they put in place a judge from Milwaukee County who I believe has got some Republican.
Appointed by Walker, I believe.
Right. Appointed by Walker. And I think there seemed to be some attempt there to say, well, this isn't just some, bomb throwing lefty judge. They seem to want to get somebody who was, again, going to be an administrator. But it just, it was clear that they didn't trust Koshnick. And there's some evidence maybe in these emails, but it's kind of speculative, so I'm not sure how I want to get into it. But.
No, that's fine. Do you know that for a brief time, about, less than 2 months, I ran Randy Koshnick's campaign for Supreme Court?
Tell us more, Todd. We should have quoted you for this story.
Shirley Abrams. I was unemployed at the time looking for a gig, and they came to me and said, hey, do you want to run this thing? Quote-unquote, run this thing. And it was all the the high-paid Republican guys who were actually running it. And so I said, sure. And I got to know Randy a little bit and tour around the state with him. And actually over 10 years ago, actually a pretty nice guy, nice family. And then they laid out the plan what they were going to do. And look, I thought Shirley Abramson was a great judge. A couple of policy things I disagreed with her. But they started rolling out this just terrible campaign against her, just lies. And I said, this is where we're going. I'm out of here. And I told Randy this. And basically, he felt he was in too deep at the time and couldn't pull out. And so he went with them. And I said, adios. And so I don't think that Randy Koshnick at the time was necessarily a bad guy. I think he was just led by these partisan hacks that were trying to get control of the Supreme Court. That's the backstory. Just so the listeners know, I do have a tangential attachment to this thing. I haven't spoken with him since then, so I have no idea what he's like now. But I think you're right in that. This is someone who certainly was involved in Republican politics. I know that personally. And so I think this is kind of a matter of trust. And I think it's important you guys keep me honest. The Supreme Court, the liberals, did not do anything illegal here. It's their right to do this if they so choose. Am I right about that?
I think that's right. And it would be nice if they came out and just said to the public, here's why we did this.
Right.
And if the reason is this guy is big in Republican circles and we need somebody to can trust, say that. But right. They haven't done that. So
yeah. No, I think Matt hit it right on the head. They don't need a reason to fire Randy Koshnick. Obviously they've done that.
Mm-hmm.
But an explanation certainly would be nice.
So let's get at this story a little bit. Again, it's on Wisconsin Watch. You can go to it. Is it wisconsinwatch.com or org?
.org.
Thank you. I always forget.
Nonprofit.
WisconsinWatch.org, O-R-G. You can read the entire thing by Jack Kelly and Matt DeFore. We're talking with them this half hour on the show. We appreciate them being here. So they fire the liberals, basically fire Randy Koshnick as the administrator of the courts, and that sets off this chain of emails. And guys, what did you find in these emails as you unearthed them here?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of things. I think that they illustrate that there is a lot of tension on the court right now between the new majority and the old majority, I guess. But, you know, we found a lot of things. That this power struggle has been ongoing for weeks or months. You know, the liberal justices have been considering some of these rule changes and personnel changes. Going back to May or June. And, you know, the conservative justices were eager to slow this process down. The emails show it. They're saying that the actions that their liberal colleagues are taking are, you know, inappropriate, they're illegitimate. They're also, you know, kind of pleading with their liberal colleagues to slow down. Let's wait until September to talk about this. And of course, our reporting came out yesterday about this, but these email exchanges were happening in early August. So at that point, they're asking to delay by more than a month. So it shows that the liberal justices were wanting to move fast, that they were doing so over the strong objections of their conservative colleagues, and that their conservative colleagues were keen on slowing the process down. And I think that is bared out over this kind of 10-day period, and, you know, a few emails going back to May and June as well. So, you know, I invite people to go and read the emails themselves. It is really a fascinating look at how the court operates, because I don't think we get these behind the scenes looks very often.
You guys are fat. Go ahead, Matt.
I was going to say there's a couple examples, but if you want to ask a question for a second.
No, I was going to say, I mean, you guys are factual reporters. I'm allowed to speculate a little bit more. Maybe I'm a little bit more cynical once in a while.
We'll check your facts. But, yeah.
That's what you're here for. Exactly what you're here for. We want the facts. To me, to your point, Jack, is that I think these conservatives were slowing this down, that's my opinion, because they knew that this redistricting case was going to be the first one or one of the first ones on the docket. And if this goes the way that many people think, if the maps are redrawn, it could jeopardize the majority, at least one of the houses in the legislature. So I think Republicans have a vested interest, and anybody thinks that the Supreme Court is nonpartisan just doesn't understand it. And I think there's been a lot of pressure by conservatives and Republicans on the Republican, the conservatives less on the court to slow this down. Yes or no?
So what I want to do with this is look at the evidence. Because I think as you read these emails, if you keep that slowing and speeding up thing in mind, you see the evidence become very clear. So, for example, when they were meeting on August 1st, this is the day that Janet Protasiewicz is being sworn in that afternoon. They're talking about court business in the morning, and the conservatives already are saying, when was she sworn in? Mm-hmm. Like, how can she do any of this right now? She hasn't been sworn in yet. And that's when the liberals respond, oh, she got sworn in back in July. Don't worry about it. And it's, again, it's both things, right, in stark relief right there. It's they were on the ball to get her ready at like 8 a.m. on Tuesday morning, and the conservatives are like, whoa, slow down. We can't do this until after this, like, you know, fake ceremony in the afternoon. And what is even funnier about it is that the oath of office that she signed on July 23rd was missing that day. Like, the Secretary of State's office couldn't even find it. And they thought it was in I think they figured it out that it was in the court administrator's office.
This is what happens when Doug LaFollette leaves us. Things go missing. Oh, where's no. Doug LaFollette? We'll be back. We'll answer
that
question.
Pure opinion.
And much more after this. Don't go anywhere. Wisconsin Watch, the Supreme Court, your phone calls next on the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Your home for local news, weather, and sports across the airwaves and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. The Big Bend region of Florida has not seen a storm this strong in more than 100 years. Hurricane Idalia hitting land there with winds of 125 miles an hour. Correspondent Omar Villafranca.
Some neighborhoods here in Citrus County are still underwater. This storm pummeled Florida's Gulf Coast with heavy winds and torrential rain. And at its peak, more than 250,000 were without power.
At least 73 people have died in a fire in Johannesburg, South Africa. For the second time this summer, Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell froze silent at a news conference. His staff says it was lightheadedness. President Biden.
Mitch is a friend, as you know, not a joke. We always, I know people don't believe that the case, but we have disagreements politically, but he's a good friend.
Hitting the road this holiday weekend?
We did surveys of AAA Northeast members. They tell us their average trip is going to be between 50 and 200 miles.
AAA's Robert Sinclair. CBS News Brief, I'm Tom Foti.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west-northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898, but 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
An RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin.
This includes a commitment to news.
Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News, today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station. As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
And apparently, Maggie Dawn, Fig Newton lover of the Maggie Dawn Show.
I was so offended, Jane. You know how much I love and admire you. You're like my freaking radio hero. And then to hear you bash my Newton.
It's still bad.
You want the cakey part cakey. You want the jammy part jammy. That is like bringing me back.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Bry. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Truth, wherever it may lead, and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show on a Wednesday, August 30th, 2023. Mr. Aaron Zommers on the board, our producer and engineer, and here in-house, in studio. I think, what do you think, Mr. Zommers? Oh, I guess Klug was here. Are these our second guest in our new studio?
I think so. Yeah. And hopefully second of many going forward, because it's really cool to have people here.
Right? Live and in person, no StreamYard. They're live bodies. I love it. I love it in person. But as reporters, do you guys find a difference when you interview people in person versus stream over the phone?
I think a little bit. If we were doing it overlooking the Overture Center, it would probably be even more special.
But I just think there's value to body language. Because especially for you guys who are asking more, you know, like you're trying to kind of peel back a layer. I think the way a person reacts to a question, their body language can tell a lot.
Yeah. Advantages and disadvantages, I think.
Really?
Yeah. Well, sometimes it can be easier to take notes when you don't have to be worried about being in the conversation and just be writing as they talk.
We have Jack Kelly and Matt DeFore from Wisconsin Watch
broke this great piece. You can check it out on WisconsinWatch.org. That's WisconsinWatch.org. Talking about the Wisconsin Supreme Court, the chaotic first week under liberal control. And guys, as we were talking about at the break, I think this email exchange that you guys have gotten through open records requests brings out the flavor, the spice, the personalities of all these different justices.
Yeah, I mean, it's clear that you get a little bit of that from their demeanor on the court and their like when they write the decisions. Like, you know, you could probably guess a Rebecca Bradley decision from like the preamble. But like, and the same thing with Brian Hagedorn. Like he's got this very like, he's trying to play this role of you know, I think people refer to him as a swing vote. But I mean, it's like he's really looking at the law and he's not trying to come up with an outcome that fits with a particular side or worldview, it seems at least. Mm-hmm. And I think that comes through in his demeanor in these emails as well. He's playing that same role, or maybe that's just who he is. But, mm-hmm. You know, there's an interesting exchange at one point, Jack, I think you had it pulled up about just, you know, some of these quick decisions that the liberals were making in the first week sort of belie their positioning when there were decisions making on the other, when the shoe was on the other foot, as he puts it. Go ahead and read that.
Right, right. So they're discussing the motion to fire Randy Koshnick as director of state courts, and Justice Hagedorn writes to his colleagues, "If the shoe were on the other foot, would those supporting Ann Walsh Bradley's motion," she made the motion to terminate him, sure, "find this problematic? If so, then perhaps this isn't the best way forward."
But Hagedorn's an interesting bird to me, because I think if you look at his decisions from the time he was put on, or got elected to the bench, he ran as a conservative. He's been hated and loved by conservatives and hated and loved by liberals in the state, depending upon what decision it is. And I think this line that you guys unearthed here, quote, "I vote against the motions both as a matter of substance and process," Hagedorn wrote, and that's speaking about the firing of Koshnick, correct? And I think that if you look at this, whether you agree with all of Hagedorn's decisions or not, I think he's tried to use that as a barometer, saying, well, has the process been there? Is that fair?
Yeah. And in this case, I think there's concerns about, you know, but let's talk about what they did. I mean, they essentially, in changing the rules of the court, they've now created a 3-person administrative panel in which 2 of the liberal members. Interestingly enough, no one had reported on who those members were, by the way, until this story, because it was actually in the emails and no one had put it out before. But Justice Dalit and Justice Karofsky are on this panel with Chief Justice Ziegler. Not surprisingly, it puts her in a 1-person minority. Right. So she basically is completely hamstrung. But, you know, is it the way that they did that? Hagedorn comes back later the following week after they voted and says, "I'm going to write a dissent on your decision from Friday." This was a decision that was made in person on August 4th, and the members who were not there, the conservative minority, had different reasons. I think Rebecca Bradley claimed that she wasn't there. You know, she couldn't come that day, so they couldn't hold the meeting for that reason. But they were like, "Whatever," and they held it anyway. You know, Hagedorn's just basically like, we are supposed to have a public hearing on these changes, and therefore these changes were not passed properly. There's disagreement about that. I think Dalit talks about how that's not the case in certain circumstances. But yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of questions about whether they followed the most transparent and proper process in doing this, or were they, again, just doing this to get it done quickly, whether that's get to the court agenda quickly, or whether it's to prevent the conservatives from slowing down the process. You know, that's up to people with opinions.
People listen to the show know one of my favorite judges. I worked for an attorney for a short time, and a federal judge named Judge Weissman, great guy from Tennessee, who once said in a courtroom, he goes, "You want to put it down there where the chickens could get at it. Is that it? Well, all right, then. Let's put it down there where the chickens could get at it," right? If people listen to all this, and it's interesting, but what does it mean, right? Well, what does this mean? So the question to you guys as reporters, what you found, I think a lot of people want to know, who's right? Or is it a gray area? Who's right in terms of, is the Supreme Court, the liberals right now, are they quote-unquote breaking the Constitution and the law as Randy Koshnick and the conservatives are trying to spin out there? Or is it that the liberals are simply following the law? These are not laws. These are administrative rules. And if you could explain to people what the difference is, and so who's who's right in terms of, are there any laws being broken? And do the liberals have the right to do this, what they're doing?
Well, I'm not an attorney, so I'm not going to speak to if laws
on,
are being
based
broken.
On your reporting, based on your reporting.
I think that the internal, basically the Supreme Court is, the way that the court functions is kind of dictated by two things. They're internal operating procedures, which they refer to as IOPs in the emails, mm-hmm. and the Supreme Court rules. And the justices...
Neither of which are laws, by the way.
Correct, to my understanding. Yeah. And the justices can change them.
Correct.
And so I think that who is right and who's wrong, I think it depends who you ask. But I think that the emails that we uncovered show that there is great urgency on both sides. Mm-hmm. Matt was talking about the Supreme Court Administrative Committee. If you actually go look at the changes that they made, they gave the Administrative Committee control over key court functions like scheduling oral arguments. They also made changes to change the amount of time that justices have to write dissents or mm-hmm. attach writings to orders, et cetera. And it just shows that they want to move faster and they want there to be structure. And the response from their conservative colleagues show that they are, you know, they seem eager to slow things down. Let's not rock the boat. So it's interesting. Who's right or wrong? That's not for us to decide. But the emails do illustrate just the urgency at the court right now.
I will say this. I think the argument about breaking the law, we hear some things about impeachment, for example. Right. I think that's political rhetoric. Clearly, there's a majority here who can basically operate as a majority, as the Republican majority in the legislature has done for the past more than a decade, doing what they want. And there's some constraints on that. You know, this liberal majority cannot write laws. Mm-hmm. They can't make laws out of whole cloth. So there are constraints on what they can do. But when it gets framed as, you know, what they're doing is illegal or they're violating the Constitution, I hear a lot of political rhetoric. And there's, I think, what I would always encourage is at least transparency as to what you're doing and why you're doing it. And the why is the hardest thing for the public and anyone, journalists included, to understand. Because even if I ask you, why'd you do that? It's the easiest thing to lie about. Right. I mean, you can't prove that someone's what they're feeling in their heart. So are the liberals moving quickly because they want to help the Democrats end the gerrymandered legislative maps? I don't know. Maybe. Mm-hmm. Are the conservatives trying to move slowly because they want to keep the Republicans in power? I don't know. But, you know, again, we are just trying to push them to tell us what they're doing, which is what these emails show, mm-hmm. and then to get them to say why they're doing it. At least we have it on the record.
So. And I think that's such an important point. And I talked about this with Pat Kreitlow before you guys came on, that me personally is, and I'm no lawyer either, but by having worked up there in the building a couple blocks away in the state capitol as a staffer, and my boss thought the world of Shirley Abramson, even though they were from different kind of political parties, if you would say that, or theories. But tremendous amount of respect. I mean, I'm not sure if you remember, Matt, but a few years ago, or years ago, I guess, time flies, 10 years ago or so, Shirley Abramson came into the Joint Finance Committee and when they were going to want to cut her budget. And she just walked down the middle of the aisle and she sat in the front row and they took a recess. And they came back and they announced there'd be no further cuts in the Supreme Court. And she walked out and she never said a word. Now that's real power. That's real power and real respect. And I think a lot of this goes back to when the Republicans decided to push this statewide referendum to change the way that the Supreme Court Chief Justice is chosen. It used to be the most senior person. And Republicans didn't like that because Shirley had been there forever and she was a progressive and she was a liberal. And so they wanted their own person, their conservative in, and they got it. Well, and it also goes back to when former justice, a conservative and former assembly speaker, Dave Prosser, decided to lay hands on Ann Walsh Bradley and choke her over, as you put, Act 10. I mean, the well was poisoned, in my opinion, based on evidence by the conservatives on the current temperature of the Supreme Court. Is that fair or not? And tell me if I'm wrong.
Well, how far back do we want to go here? I mean, there's, you know, the conservatives felt threatened by the Supreme Court back in 2000, starting in 2005, when they felt like the court was making decisions that was going to expose, you know, some of their donors to, you know, legal liabilities. And so they, you know, started spending gobs of money to get folks like Justice Ziegler and Justice Gableman elected. And since then, the conservatives were in control. And it's just... Since then, Republicans have been in power many of those years, and they've made decisions that people are, you know, it seems like there's probably some popular, but it seems like there's a lot that are unpopular. And that's why we see Democrats winning so many of these elections. And now Janet Protasiewicz, and there's consequences. Elections have consequences, right? So
let's go back to this story, because we teased this before the break. There's a subheadline here called, and I love this subhead, "Oath Goes Missing. Quote, this is odd, exclamation point. Explain."
Yeah, so on the morning of August 1st, I think as early as around 11 a.m., Janet Protasiewicz has started to weigh in on some of these discussions about Koshnick. Her conservative colleagues are suspicious. When was Janet sworn in? And they respond, oh, she did it a week ago. They filed the paperwork, and they're questioning whether there were eight justices for a week, which would, of course, not be allowed. No. And so all of a sudden the question becomes, where is Janet Protasiewicz's oath? You know, big investiture ceremony in the afternoon, but of course, you know, the actual paperwork needs to be filed for it to happen.
Kind of like when you get married, you have to sign the marriage certificate.
Right, right. And so, you know, we based on our reporting, had heard that there had been some issues with it and wanted to find out. So submitted a records request to the Secretary of State's office asking, A, for a copy of the oath, and B, for you know, discussions about the oath on August 1st. And it turned out that, you know, as people, some of our colleagues in the press corps started to ask for a copy of the oath to show that she is, in fact, a justice now, they couldn't find it. And they went on this, you know, something of a wild goose chase, I guess, where they're just, you know, shooting these messages back and forth. But
you
know,
this is, if you find them, any, yeah, because this may be perhaps my favorite part of the entire story. I know it's salacious and tawdry, but I love salacious and tawdry.
Right. So this is like about 3 o'clock on August 1st. A staffer in the Secretary of State's office writes to another staffer, like, just so you know, we got two questions from reporters asking if we have Protasiewicz's oath of office. We're having some difficulty finding it. A couple of staffers then go to the state court's office to see if they have the oath, but they come back to the Secretary of State's office empty-handed. The messages continue. They're saying they walked it over, talking about the court staff. and then they start to just have this kind of objectively funny exchange where, this is odd, one of the staffers writes to the other ones. Maybe they got intercepted by a protester or something. Maybe they got lost in the tunnels, another one suggests. And then within a couple of minutes of there, they do finally get the oath. But, I mean, to literally not be able to find the document.
And let me just put in here.
Hold that. We got to go to break. Okay, we'll come back and we'll pick up on that. And Matt's thought is, let me tell you, from personal experience, the only person that ever got lost in a Capitol secret tunnel was my former boss, Dale Schultz, when Scott Walker wanted to make sure that he got lost so they could pass Act 10. That's a true story. That's for another day. Back after this on the other side. This is the Todd Allball Show. And this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898, but 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Mostly sunny today. We'll get to around 78 for a high this afternoon. The wind out of the south at 5 to 15. Tonight, clear 57. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, breezy, and a bit warmer with a high of 85. Then on Saturday through the weekend, going to be sunny and hot with highs in the low to mid 90s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Right now, it's 48.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
Pursuing truth wherever it may lead, whether it's the state capitol, Superior, Wisconsin, or the Wisconsin State Supreme Court. And having fun doing so. It's Wednesday, August 30th, 2023. Mr. Aaron Zommers on the board. Our guests in-house here in the studio high atop State Street, a block off the Capitol Square. Matt DeFore and Jack Kelly of Wisconsin Watch talking about their great article on the Wisconsin Supreme Court today. You can read the entire thing. I highly encourage you to do so at wisconsinwatch.org. That's wisconsinwatch.org. Gives you a glimpse, because this has been going back. We've talked about it on our show. There's been other shows that here at Civic Media we've talked about. It's been in the paper. Lots of tit-for-tat going on. And before we went to break, Matt, I cut you off. You're going to add in this story over this lost oath of office by Janet Protasiewicz.
Right. So they couldn't find the oath late in the day on Monday. I'm sorry, on Tuesday when she was sworn in. And I was going to mention that the reason why this is even worth noting is because she had signed the oath back in July. Mm-hmm. There's that question of, well, why did she sign it so early? It's not entirely unusual. We looked at other oaths that had been signed by the current justices. Some were signed on July 31st, the day before. Some were signed on August 1st. One in case, Ann Walsh Bradley, she signed hers on July 10th of the year, that the last time she was sworn in, and didn't file it until September, back when Doug LaFollette was in charge of the Secretary of State's office.
See? All goes back to Doug.
But the fact that the conservatives in this case were just kind of all over that on the morning when she was starting to weigh in on court business, it just seemed odd that they were so concerned about this. And why hadn't the oath just been sent over earlier than August 1st so that was ready on and on file? And again, is the answer because the court clerk's or the court's administrative office, you know, was just trying to, you know, follow procedure and make sure it wasn't sent over until after the public swearing in ceremony? Or, you know, were they just dragging their feet like the conservatives hoped that they would? I don't know the answer to that, but it was just interesting to have that fact out there.
And the fact is, we were talking about this over the break, that the law, the Constitution of Wisconsin, pretty much spells out when the start of a Supreme Court justice term begins. So it doesn't really matter necessarily when they sign it. It's just at noon on a particular day or whatever. So, I mean, this whole notion that by some of the conservatives that, oh, my gosh, we have, you know, eight justices suddenly, really not any proof of that. Am I right in that?
Yeah. I mean, I think I forget what the exact language is, but it's, you know, the term starts on August 1st following the election. Right. And so, you know, I think it goes back to Matt's point about why were they trying to make, you know, stir this up? Why are they, you know, kicking a cloud of dust up about this? Yeah. Is it because they're trying to slow things down? Is it because they had actual concerns? There's no way to know, right? We're not justices on the Supreme Court.
It's almost like in reverse, though. But you'd make fine justices, I'll say that.
Not a lawyer.
Some of the people up there, it's debatable as well. Anyway, but if you reverse it, not that I've ever been married, nobody foolish enough to do that. But once you get married, it's standing up in front of a church or the justice, whatever the piece, it's when you sign the document. That's when you're married. You don't have to stand in front of anybody to be quote unquote married. So it's almost the reverse. It's when the Constitution says you're a justice, not when you sign the document.
Let me pull it back even further from that, in that there is, I think, a lot of confusion right now among the court personnel. And we saw that in one of the emails we unearthed. There was a court commissioner who emailed out after they had passed these new rules on August 4th, after this like back and forth where Annette Ziegler was basically like accusing the liberals of not giving her the record she wanted. And then she blasted out these changes to the media before they had even told the court personnel right. about it through an email to all the court personnel. This weekend, the final week of the end of this first week that we write about was, you know, I think a lot of confusion for the court personnel. And on Monday, court commissioner Nancy Kopp was like, we can't get in the middle of this. Mm-hmm. Like, here's what we're going to do. We've done it before when you guys have been fighting. I'm paraphrasing, but we did this before when you guys were fighting over stuff. But, you know, we've got to go by the book. And I think it's hard for people in that environment to go by the book when they're dealing with people who are sniping. So.
Right. Yeah. The email says, during another period of intense disputes among justices.
I think you hit it, Matt. I mean, this sniping, and to me, yes, I always love a good kind of salacious, interesting story. Just as a reader, I'm entertained by this. I'm informed by it because we find out things we hadn't known before. But most of all, I come away with it just with a sad feeling because it's a, I mean, I don't want to overstate it. I had the fortune of being in rooms where Shirley Abramson, the late great Chief Justice of Wisconsin, was, and I'll say I got to know her a little bit. And whether you agreed with her decisions or not, I will tell you one thing. She loved this court, and she loved the state of Wisconsin and the integrity. And I talk about this on the show all the time, the integrity of our institutions, whether it was Don Schneider, the former chief clerk of the Wisconsin State Senate, or Shirley Abramson, Supreme Court Chief Justice. These people cared about our institutions. And what I come away reading this great piece is just that our institution of the Supreme Court is in trouble.
I think there's certainly some room for concern about the collegiality. Obviously, that's been an issue for more than a decade now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it rips away any sense that there is a court of seven people who work together well, who show that as a society we are capable of working together and getting the people's business done, you know, following the law, interpreting the law. You can have some disagreements, but, you know, this is a much more vitriolic kind of battle going on, and I think that's what we see in these emails.
About a minute left. You can read this story at Wisconsin, a minute and a half, I should say, wisconsinwatch.org. Matt, Jack, what are your takeaways, your big takeaways after doing reporting this story? What do you think people need to know?
Oh, man. I think that the court is going to continue to drive the news cycle and is going to continue to capture people's attention. We're all thinking about redistricting right now, but there are many other things. Act 10 jumps out at me as a big one. Ballot yeah. drop boxes, et cetera. There's a presidential election next year. It's going to continue to be the source of real influence in Wisconsin for the next couple of years.
Matt?
This is a fundamental battle over whether the court is going to be moving quickly or slowly as it handles some of these big cases. And I think the two sides have shown how they're trying to use different tactics to gain their advantage.
You guys are fantastic at answering short questions. I just kind of read the clock about a minute and a half left or a minute or so left.
Too quick.
Yeah, no, but here's to your point on this. Do you think it's going to be, for people that don't always hear this or understand it, they're going to say, well, why don't they just make one of the liberals the Chief Justice? Why can't that happen?
I wonder if that's where this is headed. I think they've tried to allow Chief Justice Ziegler to stay in her term, which I believe they put her in before
months ago.
Yeah, it was right after the election, and
it was after the election,
And again, that struck me as like, that's another power move, right?
Because the conservatives pushed that.
Right, and they didn't give the majority a chance, the new majority a chance to have a say on that. So again, it's the sniping that's been going on.
Right, I think they're just trying to circumvent it. It shows with this mm-hmm. administrative committee, right? The Chief Justice gets to be on the administrative committee in the minority. There you have it.
Succinct, wonderful. It is Jack Kelly and Matt DeFore from Wisconsin Watch. It's wisconsinwatch.org, wisconsinwatch.org. Thank you guys for taking the time. Great story, great reporting.
Thanks, Todd.
Thanks for having us.
Our pleasure. Stay tuned. More on the other side. Hour number two straight ahead. Your phone calls. Don't want to miss it. This is the Todd Oddball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898, but 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap,
WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire,
and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.